Welcome to the One Shot Test Kitchen. Today's episode, Stew Pot, Tales from a Fantasy Tavern. Hello everyone and welcome to the One Shot Test Kitchen, where we try out and review tabletop RPGs. I am Mike Kelly and I am joined as always by Samara.
Hello!
And for this review, we are actually joined by Jared, who you heard in the last episode.
Hey, I made my charisma check to be asked back.
Keeping it topical. That works. We wanted to have Jared back because, like, Jared is kind of a longtime player and was had a lot of, like, good thoughts about this game. So I want to start talking about it just, like, we're now recording this, like, with it quite at a distance from us, and I'm curious if people's impressions of it after the initial playthrough have changed, or how people feel about it with that kind of distance.
Yeah, so I think I ended gameplay kind of on a curious high, that I was like, I think there's something really, like, there were parts that were really exciting and felt like new and different and full of potential, but I hadn't really spent the time to think of them cohesively. And then just the other night, I was reading this, like, zine, which I will get the name of, and we can put it in the notes. But it's this and it reminded me of the gameplay because it was a zine that had, it was talking basically just about role-playing games and sort of meta-narratives and really breaking the fourth wall, an interest in breaking the fourth wall in role-playing games. It reminded me in some ways of Stew Pot, because Stew Pot is very dependent upon your own knowledge and interest in being in traditional sword and sorcery RPG world. And this zine had tons of mini games in it, one page. But at the end of it, they're not ultimately playable. It's like really more of like a thought exercise as you go through the rules and think about what playing those games would be. And I think that on the whole, there are a lot of things about Stew Pot that make it an exciting game. But I think there are more, what I took from it was where it took my brain as like a thought exercise to make me think about RPGs, how we tell stories, how we engage in games and mini games. And we can get into that later. But that was sort of my overall takeaway where my head has gone about it.
Does that mean you're more down on it, or like what, like, I guess, what is the kind of like,
well, it depends on what the here. I guess, why are you engaging with it, right? Like, if you're engaging with it, it's your expectation and intention. So if you're intending to have, I think if you go into it with the right mindset that the absurdity of some of the rules of some of those mini games are actually quite fantastic, because to me they speak to the absurdity of like some of the over complexity of tabletop RPG games. Like, you can get deep enough in 5e or high enough level and you're like, well, wait, no, hold on. We have to reference this table and that table and this table. And so to do that, to make a cocktail, to me, was making an interesting commentary about RPG rules. But did it make for a great game? I don't know. By the end of that mini game, we all sort of felt like, okay, and that was that game. But I appreciated it for sort of how it engaged me philosophically.
So it sounds like it's made you think about games more as opposed to think about like Stew Pot more, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I loved the world that we were building and I felt like it facilitated. It was really fun to build a world as you went instead of spending so much heavy time in advance. Like, it also got me really thinking on modular games and ways that you can like build characters. And it's like, well, I think we maybe mentioned this, that it feels similar to like the Blades in the Dark mechanic of the flashbacks, where you just get into it and then you can figure out where your character's been. Or like when we had the cocktail game and I made you the owl feathers drink and you got to fill in some things about your history there. We didn't have 12 pages of backstory that you were carrying into this game. We got to build it once we got there. And that's an exciting way to play a game. So I think it facilitated that. And I think that that's a cool way for it. But fundamentally, I think it's, for me personally, it got really caught up. It took me to a more philosophical place than like a active game space, if that makes sense.
No, totally. I have some strong responses to stuff you just said. but Jared, I wanted to know what your feelings were on it now that we've had a little bit of remove.
Uh, Yeah, I think I'm actually a little higher on it than I was when we recorded it, the game initially. I enjoyed myself, but ended up feeling like there's a lot of interesting stuff here, but I felt like a lot of the stuff I enjoyed are things that we had brought in from outside and were not necessarily super supported by the rules. But sort of like looking back, I looked back over the list of games we played today, and there were definitely ones I liked better than others, but I had less of a feeling than like that was a super weak game that didn't work for me. Like, no, I think we got something useful out of every single game. And honestly, where I'd like to see more tinker on the edges here is more sort of tools and support and consistency. But I think I'm really fond of the base and exactly the sort of the things. The philosophical implications that Samara was talking about were also really, really interesting. I really like this approach. It's an interesting way to think about things.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I do want to get more into that philosophical approach, but I want to kind of give my point of view on this because I think I'm more down on it than both of you. I mean, my impression of it was that I was actually kind of disappointed with it. I mean, to a certain extent, this is also I probably had higher expectations coming in than anyone else playing it. Because I have seen this game floating around and I've been really interested in playing it. So it kind of had a high bar to clear for me personally. But I don't feel the game fully cohered in what it was trying to do. And I'm intuiting of what it was trying to do by setting up both a sense of place and a sense of like adventurer, like the party kind of community commonality or something like that. And I don't feel, and like kind of like sketch the path from an adventurer to a commoner essentially. Like, and I don't feel it really did that. I think in fits and starts it did, but I don't think like overall that it really in my mind cemented into a coherent whole. And like, I'll give you an example. Because I'm editing the first episode, the gameplay episode, and there's stuff in there that I just straight up forgot about the inn, like because it was never really used in any of the games or really not referenced. I think that we had some good ideas, like Trip the Gargoyle is a great idea, and like that's funny, that's something we can latch on to. We name the fucking inn after this dude. But remember when Samara talked about like the roof to the inn, like that really wasn't brought up. I had completely forgotten about it, and I didn't really like. Oh right, I guess that was not in my picture of the inn because it was never really, you know, it didn't cohere into that whole thing. So.
Right. I mean, and I think that speaks to Jared's point about the kind of mechanics and rules not necessarily supporting some of what it's trying to do as a game. Also, I don't know, like, it sounds like there is a, like, you were craving maybe a more linear progression or some more clarity on the development of that arc and that story or a place for them to slot into. Like, I feel like we did a lot of crowbarring of, like, we should make our characters talk to each other. We should yes. build this, like, the game itself yes. did not incentivize that. But I do think, as you were talking, Mike, it also makes me think of Spoken Magic, a game that you and I had some difficulty with. And I wonder if we're just not the type of gamers who, like, only need the vaguest sort of impetus to have an excuse to just role play. That, like, I think that there's a type of gamer who wants to sit at a table and be their characters and just, like, go for a while and a while and a while without necessarily a purpose. And I think this game sprinkles you with enough things that you could take it and run. And maybe because the nature that it's a podcast and we're conscious of time and also the type of gamers that we are, that doesn't necessarily resonate with us as well. And I think it's a combination of maybe that and the fact that it does not, I would agree, I think that we're all in agreement that like the game system itself sets you up for an expectation of you're going to build an inn, you're going to be these adventurers, you're going to have this backstory where you're being ingratiated in the community, and then the rule system doesn't really allow for you to explicitly explore that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true to an extent, though. I mean, but I think there's an overarching, like, I think there's like a Think of it almost at the strategic and tactical level.
Mm-hmm.
Like the strategic goal of this game was probably to illustrate again this whole thing coming together. But even at the tactical level, like I'm thinking about specifically the mini game for the drinks.
Mm-hmm.
You mixing the drink. I didn't know what we were supposed to be doing in that scene. Like until like we were nearly done with it. Was I supposed to be reminiscing? Was I supposed to be mm-hmm. building like a deeper bond with the bartender? Like was I supposed to be illustrating like I didn't even know, but even mechanically, like I didn't, I looked at this today before I came in. It says here, like the only instruction it gives you is it's your responsibility to mix the perfect drink, something perfect for the situation that can push the adventurer to look inside and find the answer on their own. That's real vague. Like you're mixing a drink, like, and like the, to what end and all that kind of
but
stuff.
But again, so like, to the role-playing thing, you know, I had all those questions I asked you to try to dig into things, and you were supposed to come in with something heavy on your mind. And I think, like, you came in with just a vague sense of things, and then I think that I got very checkmarky of, like, okay, I asked this question, because I was thinking about the ingredients and not about, like, oh, fundamentally, this is just guy walks into a bar with his troubles. And again, the rules don't necessarily prompt you for that so much, but I think its intention was this is a chance for you to really dig into like your character's backstory and a trouble that you are carrying with you. But we didn't necessarily explore that or give that space so that then, yeah. No, the most was like, this will remind you of home. You seem to be homesick.
Yeah, no, the game doesn't feel like it can quite, it absolutely sometimes wants to be that vague role-playing thing, but sometimes it's very like, here's a bunch of cards, check these boxes. And I think yeah. there's 100% room for games with that much disparateness, like that much type of different gameplay, because that could actually be very refreshing in a game to have like a heavy improv scene with everybody, and then a light, dictated, a lot of input randomness. Here's a random NPC who walks into the bar. But mm-hmm. we were never given the tools to do that. Like, I would have loved to see in the summary of games, like, how many people is this for? What mechanics does it involve? So we could have balanced a little bit. Like, let's do a three-people game. Let's do a solo game. Let's do a game that just gives us a bunch of random stuff and figure it out, rather than just mm-hmm. picking the name off the list, which didn't really give us a lot of input. Like, I was astonished that the job experience only showed up once.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I assumed we'd have more time yeah. to do that. It's like, let's see if I roll for it. Like, nope, never came up again, ever.
I mean, to be fair, we also played a little bit of a truncated version of it. So I'm sure that if we had gotten it, like, there's a bunch of games we didn't play.
Right.
You know, there's one that's, like, straight up, like, you know, a bar fight, another, like, a mysterious romantic stranger or something like that. I think more of it would have gotten into play. But again, yeah, I think part of the problem is in the yeah. presentation of those.
Yeah, we played half the games. There are 12 games. We played six. And the
okay.
fact that,
okay.
And I don't think we saw any mechanic more than once.
Yeah, I do know that, like, I think there are some things that are, like, that also require D6s and stuff like that. Like, they do repeat the mechanics. They're not all bespoke, mm-hmm. certainly. The presentation of that information was also very, very, like, not great. Like Jared, like you said, like, if you're just picking names off a list, like, okay, well, you can kind of guess what this game's going to be about thematically, but you can't really guess, like, how many people are going to be in it, and, you know, like, how long does this take, and ba-da-ba-da-ba. I really would have liked, I guess, like, a quick description at the beginning where it's like, okay, this is for two players, there's three stages to this. One person, like, again, using the bartender story. One, person describes a trouble. Second, bartender mixes a drink. Three, like, you talk through how that drink kind of gets through that trouble. And, like, so you know what to expect, and you know, like, the pacing of the scene. Mm-hmm. You know how, like, what you're going to be do here. And it's not pure improv and just finding out as you go along the way, and you're not getting whipsawed by it.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's, again, classic Goldilocks paradox of how many rules do you have versus, like, you know, how much structure versus mm-hmm. lack of structure. And I do think, maybe it's my compulsive need to think that everything is my fault, but I'm like, am I missing something here that is an opportunity to think about these games in a slightly different way? And again, it gets into that kind of philosophical engagement that I kind of teased at the beginning. But I think fundamentally, even if you're going to create a game that is a philosophical exploration about what makes games, how do you game, and when you're role-playing, like, what are these sort of ingredients of role-play, you know, and how we engage with them, and what stories are created when you take certain ingredients and, like, put them together in that way. You know, that's an interesting exploration, but again, I'm not sure. Maybe if we played twice as long and we got to the ending, we'd feel that way. But I think that I lost the opportunity to even engage in that more philosophical way because I was promised like this interesting world that we were going to build that was going to house that philosophical engagement. And I felt like the building of the inn and our relationships in that world was displaced by like the mini games, even just with slight tweaks, could have felt like they were more intentionally building that without changing the rules, just like changing some of the language.
Yeah, I think expectations would go a long way towards, yeah, understanding. It's a very atmosphereless game. Like, it doesn't come in with a ton of atmosphere. Well, it sets you up to believe there's going to be a ton of atmosphere, and neither is a problem. There's something fine about being very freeform, but it's, like, it seems very lighthearted, but I think a lot of the prompts in games actually encourage you to have, like, scenes that require, like, a real emotional connection. It doesn't give you the tools to get there. I kind of think this game would almost shine as an add-on to an existing game. Like a bunch of people who had played a D&D group and were like, and now we're going to retire and fill in our backstory and the inter-stories, but we have relationships. Like, I think the best stuff I said was all stuff I stole from someone I'd done, you know, in the last 10 years.
No, totally. There is no real instructions on how, like, on how to build up how you guys know each other. Like, or, like it says, like, okay, build the stories that you had in flashback, but then you're kind of going from a standing start in that respect. And again, like, to your point, that could be sort of the point. Like, you know, that's how it's meant to go, but, like,
I don't think when
we've just created these characters, like,
first step absolutely could have been, it's something that I'm not a huge fan of Fiasco, but I think Fiasco does very well with clear, here's your relationship building rules. And now there are almost no rules of interaction, but your relationships are perfect.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. How do we know each other? Like, were our characters, like, adventuring together? Were they disparate people? Are they distant relations? Or, like, professionally acquainted? Or totally. Like, there could be a lot of stuff there.
Or do they need to matter less? You know, like, take more of a quiet year. Take more of a quiet year approach where, or Cozy Town, you know, where you're, yeah, there are characters that come back up. And these are just some characters that you've created, but maybe the mayor becomes an even bigger character than, you know, the farmer fighter. But this is just to give you some population to play with. And really what this is about is the inn. The inn is the character. But if that was so, then there would need to be more games expressly about the inn and what's happening directed to the inn.
I think the game wants you to fill in a lot of NPCs in places where we're filling in ourselves. Like, it says an adventurer NPC, it's like, for a lot of them. And we just went with our adventurer because that's the more interesting relationship. But I think the game is thinking you'll invent a bunch more people.
Do you think this game would play differently if we had twice as many players?
Yes.
I think, well, yes, by definition, but I mean...
Sorry, bad question. How do you think this game would play differently with twice as many players?
I think it would be probably even more disjointed.
Yeah.
Because the games are like, I feel they kind of max out at like two or three. Like, there's a bartender and a patron. There's two people in a fight. There's like, some of them involve more people. Like the cooking thing that we did is like the tasters and the chef and all that kind of stuff.
Right. But yeah, my favorite scenes were the three of us together. And more than that, I think it gets messy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, it wouldn't benefit from having, like, three other players that popped in as the NPCs. Then you're just like, yeah.
I'm like, the more I think about this game, the more, like, I'm like, maybe my assessment of what this game was trying to be is misguided. Because it's like, it seems like it wants to do a lot of things. It wants to, like, show, like, the measure, the, how, like, adventurers become commoners. It wants to show, like, little mundane stories of day-to-day life. It wants to create a place in the tavern, like a sense of place in the tavern. Mm-hmm. It wants to bring in other members of the community and all that kind of stuff. What is the overarching intent of this game? And I actually don't know now that I think about it.
I don't know. I'm kind of hot for this idea that Jared posed, which is that it's a game that serves really well as an epilogue to a campaign for some characters. Like, this would be exceptional at the end of a campaign to be like, great, because it feels like a cool down. And then the world, you've got so much of the existing world. Go back to a village that your adventurers went and did something in and have some history in and are settling down to. The inn is new, but some of the NPCs maybe return, and your characters come with some of this backstory. So the disjointedness of the games really do feel like just a cool down, like, from this, you know, heightened dragon killing, whatever your grand adventures were. And it's hard to come down when you haven't had that experience as players and, like, built that world.
That's true. Right. I mean, yeah, like, maybe it is meant to be more like an interstitial game.
I'd be interested how it would play out with a group of people who, even if they weren't playing characters they'd played together, previously existed as a group. Mm. I mean, obviously, I've played with Mike and Samara have played a ton. I'm at least familiar with Samara's playstyle from listening to the podcast, but we've never actually played together as a trio before.
Right.
And I wonder if it would be different in a group that was a fairly coherent group, even with not with specifically this game or these characters. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say this is a game that would, like, not do well at, like, pick it up at PAX Unplugged with some strangers. Like, it would fall on its face.
Absolutely.
It thrives, I think, on, like, that in knowledge that you have with each other that you can just sort of go and run with. Mm-hmm.
So I guess maybe the thing I'm thinking about then is, like, this game isn't coherent, but it isn't coherent by design. Like, I mean, or it's meant to be... Coherent is the wrong word, because I think it does have a certain thing it wants to convey, but I think it's like, it's not a soup to nuts, like, experience. Like, it requires something to be brought into it. It, like, you know, whether that's player cohesion, whether that's character histories, or something like that. Mm.
I think it knows what it wants to be, and just doesn't quite know how to get there, or how to support people in getting there.
And what do you posit it wants to be?
Well... Maybe not in the overall where it wants to get you, I'm not sure about, but what Mike was saying before about it wants to set up an inn and a town and a structure. It feels like it wants to be a relationship sim's the wrong word.
No, but it does feel like it feels like a sim game. Like, it certainly is definitely leaning into that category, for sure.
I mean, I will say this, there's one unique thing about this game that I think it did in a way that no... Well, not in a way, but it got to a place that no other game has ever gotten me to, that I've always wanted to get to, is that I felt like our characters were genuinely friends.
Mm.
And I've tried that so often in regular play. Every time I go in with the intention of, like, I am going to be friendly and helpful, we are going to get along, and it never, ever works in actual play. Like, conflict's more fun. I guess I think I game to... experiment with things and try things I wouldn't try in real life, and, like, I try not to be a jackass in real life or portray or pursue a goal to beyond where it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a fun way to play a game. But this game didn't encourage that. This game actually encouraged us to sit down and have interesting conversations. That's where I felt like the fact that there weren't a lot of restraints was actually good, because in a regular D&D game, like, you can try to have a serious conversation with another player, but you've got a lot going into it that's sort of governing things. And you have to think, like, where are we going with this? And how are we coming out of this scene? Am I wasting everyone's time? And this is like, no, this is just the three of us. We get to make up anything we want that makes the scene go. And if the scene doesn't work, no big. I have not derailed much.
Right.
I think what you're getting at, Jared, is... I think in other games, not all of them, obviously, but, like, a good chunk, there is a goal. Like, there is something that all the characters are working towards to achieve. Damn near any of the games that we've played on this podcast, like, okay, like, there is an endpoint we have in mind, and or there is a conflict or something like that. There really isn't that much in Stew Pod. It is, like... The goal, in as much as it's not a goal game. It is, it is a game about existing in this context, and like that allows for a lot more time downtime to like have those conversations and have like little moments like that. Like you're not trying to build up this tavern because the I don't know the fucking king is coming and it's got to get to a good point where you know all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like no, we're just living out the rest of our lives here, and like every day is a new adventure. Every day is a new tale from the fantasy right. tavern.
Yeah,
stage and agent of games.
Yeah, it's true. Though, I mean, I think that there's a quality of like radical softness to it that like has to be like recognized and considered. And also that it, I think what's interesting about it is that fundamentally it's about adventurers who have seen some shit, like turning that on its head and slowing down and being like struggling with and navigating a world that is like, there is not a disguised breaking into the king's court that's going to end in bloodshed. It's like, I don't know, how do you make the perfect drink? Like, these are the stakes. So it's a lowering of stakes for these characters. And also then, like, the metagame for me as a player that's so used to going in and being like, oh, well, so often I'm just, like, plucked from my small village, destined for greatness, and I'm used to amping up. And it's a game that's taking me as a player that's so used to going in to games to amp up to reach a goal and be like, nope, you've reached your goals. So how do you come down from that? And how does a game system engage you in such a way to be like, nope, take it down? Like I found I played a character that was like, had seen some shit and was like gruff and, you know, was tough and did not like fit into this and very actively felt that like, okay, well, you can't just like shoot all your problems. You can't force action. You can't come at this with a sort of linear aggressive approach. You have to just engage and exist in the world. And what does that do for your character? And I think philosophically, like, what does that do for me as a player to just engage with the game? And be like, just be here with two other people and see where the story takes you. That's tough. Yeah. And sometimes, honestly, like, to be fair, like, not so satisfying if you don't have that expectation going in.
Right. It breaks one of the fundamental rules of improv, which is you want every scene has to have a goal. So, you know, at least one character has to want something, preferably two. Not preferably, but often two.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah. And yeah. And this is very deliberately eschewing that. It's like, you're not aiming to build up the tavern. You're just like, that's just a consequence of living this out. Like, it happens whether you want it to or not.
Well, except the rules, I think you do think that's a goal.
What makes you say that?
The mechanics. The fact that there are mechanics about, like, converting your experience points over and upgrading the tavern. Mm. And I think you could do something more freeform where it's just sort of, if it feels appropriate, upgrade the tavern a level here. But it's they're very mechanical bits, which feel sort of grafted on. I do think it's at odds.
But is it? Let me push back on this slightly because I don't know if it's necessarily like achieving. Like I don't think the building up the tavern is an achievement. I think it's more of a marking the passage of time. Like it's not, or at least that's how it felt to me. It's like the tavern is getting more mature. Like there's more stuff that's happening, and like you're adding. Like it's like. I picture it almost like when you like move into a new apartment, like stuff grows up on the walls a little bit, like gradually. So it becomes more lived in. It becomes more of a place for you and all that kind of stuff. I realize I'm gesturing and there's literally nothing on my fucking wall.
I feel subtweeted.
I think it's a both and. I think it is that, Mike, but also to Jared's point, it is also feels like somebody playtested this and gave them a note that it needed some structure. They were like, great. So then every third round, you know, do this thing where you do the upgrades. And I feel like it's fine. I like the idea of you have to do something every three rounds. I like the idea that there is that the only forward momentum impetus is time. But I think that there's a more interesting way to do it than this like weirdly hyper mechanical way of converting points and then just like picking, do you have a chef now? Like there could have been something that felt more in line with some of the other games that spoke to the passage of time.
And yes. Mm. And like the sliced game had the mechanic where literally it's like, how well do you do on this check depends on the level of you're in, like you're adding it to your, you add it to your role.
That's
and
true.
It's like
actually,
a little
yes.
weird little bit of ludonarrative dissonance.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I think most of the game does not want to be that. does not care about that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this, you said it, I think is kind of like, this game is a, like, kind of ludonarrative dissonance, the game, to some extent. Because it's trying to do a lot of things, and the story doesn't match the mechanics, which doesn't match the story, I guess. Like, I need to think about this. Why don't we take a break, and we will be right back with more of Stewpop. So it seems like from what we're talking about, this game is really, at least in my mind now, it's a lot more of a cipher of a game than I think that we intended. Like, it has a kind of a clear statement of purpose, Tales from a Fantasy Tavern and all that kind of stuff. But the way that it goes about that, I guess I was probably expecting more. Each game that we played was going to be a tale from the Fantasy Tavern, whereas it seems like a little bit more, it's a little bit more chaotic than that. It does not have that structure that I think I was looking for. But at the same time, I think, as I've kind of alluded to before, that like this is, I think it might have been intended. And I think that this game may have been, I think this game can live in a kind of chaotic mechanical state and like narrative state, like function as a mirror for what we want to reflect and what we're bringing to this game. And I think part of the reason that I think we're not really agreeing we're agreeing broadly on some of the big stuff, but like, I think the reason that, like, I think we each came to this with kind of a different view of what we wanted this to be. I mean, I feel we've talked through that, but I'm curious what you think about, like, this kind of game structure that kind of, it is a reflection of, like, our own role-playing experiences.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to get, like, fully fucking meta on this.
Yeah, well, I think it is. I think it's a game that really, I think you put it perfectly. It's a game that is a great mirror for what you bring into it. And it's specific enough that it gives you something to hold on to, but it's really reflective of your expectations, your hopes, and like your desires for this game. And that's why it being a DM-less game that somebody's not setting the setting for you and the book itself is not being hyper-specific, I think a critical step would be a degree of alignment for the players that you're going together for, like, the maximum, best, like, most satisfying gaming experience, the tidiest gaming experience. But to your point, Mike, I think that there's something kind of unique and interesting about it. Not necessarily replayable, but I think there's something unique and interesting about playing a game where we did come in with very different things to watch as they lined up, as those expectations started to coagulate in the mess, and we found each other, to Jared's point, like, oh, we were actually friends with each other. We felt like we listened and connected to each other as characters. And I think it's an interesting way to come to it as a player, where so many other games are like, you're on this crew together and you got a mission, you got to do it, and you're just on the same crew and that's why you're doing it. It's like, no, we all stumbled into this town for different reasons, and through stickball games and, like, you know, mushroom picking and whatnot, we found our way to this place, to this inn, to these relationships. And I think it's a very interesting way to be challenged to think about storytelling and role playing and loosening up sometimes. Like, what I want to take from this game into other ones is, maybe as a DM, I don't need to be so prescriptive about why people are together. Like, allowing breathing room for narratives to develop. And I think what the oddity of the mini games did was that it forced you to, you came in with preconceived notions, but the rules were so strange, and you had to be very present and just engage and see what came up from there. And I think that that created a very interesting experience for me as a player. Because I can be kind of tidy as a player sometimes, because my DM brain is always like, ooh, what would be like a really great moment for this? And because the mini games were so odd, I couldn't always do that. I think it's a great game for DMs. Like, I think it's a great game, like, honestly. Yeah.
I think you absolutely came into this with one of the tools. Like, you brought, Samara, you brought a tool into this that really, I think, helped unlock some of the more obscure mini games. Where you just sort of in the first scene went like, you, you are the boy who's picking poisonous mushrooms. And I think we used that through the entire game. That was very important to giving it a little bit of direction and helping us through. I think that's, I think that you're exactly right that the DM thought process is helpful to making sense of this.
Yeah, I mean, you are trying to create, like, at a DM, like, to be utterly reductive, needs to create scenes. And, like, that this game is all scenes. Like, this game is, and it's scenes without a lot of guidance. I guess that... I'm kind of making faces here, because it's like, do I like that about this game, then?
Here's some things that I do... that I can say that I do like about it. I am intrigued and have been thinking for a long time since this game about the modular nature of it. And it also came up because of that thing that I just sent you, Mike. It's a, and Jared, you might be into this. It's called Strings, and it's like an indie pub little zine, but it's an add-on for any game that has a death mechanic. And it reminded me of this, where everything, all the mini games are very modular, and Strings is a very cool thing because you can plug it into anything. And I was like, well, could you create a whole tabletop RPG that was super modular? This tried to do it. What's lost from that? What's gained from that? But the idea of a modular that could be done in any order, that adds something and that the story develops because of the way you chose the mini games, is exciting to me. I'm not sure that they stuck the landing, but I really appreciate the thesis and the exploration of it. I think that also outside of the context of a weak overarching narrative, as we've already discussed, of our own connection as adventurers and the building of the inn, that there were some really interesting and funny and enjoyable moments that the games themselves, like I was delighted by the Bard minigame. And as a mechanic, I was like, it's a cool mechanic. It's a fun one to think about. Man, again, you could insert that into any game. Like, you could put a bard character and be like, we'll just see where the players go from it. Certainly something you could borrow from. But also just as an exercise, it's like a fun... That was a fun thing that created like a fun story. So I felt like... It almost felt like a television show. It was like that season of The Mandalorian where there are like 5 million different directors. Where you're just like, every episode feels really different. I'm not sure like it's cohesively there. Like any, you know, not so disjointed as like a Black Mirror, but definitely like a television show that had different directors every episode.
Interesting. Like that really makes me think of sort of like Mulholland Drive, where I enjoy a lot of little scenes. Like there are a lot of amazing scenes in it, but I really resent David Lynch trying to tell me that it's a coherent narrative. It is not. And if you were pretending it was a coherent narrative, I would not be mad at you. Just it's a bunch of little scenes that are vaguely, vaguely connected. And that's fine. It can be that.
Yes. And maybe this is where it struggles, is that it gives the impression, or that we came with the expectation that it was going to, you know, have some nice icing over the top and be a full cake. And it's like, no, this is just the appetizer poo-poo platter of a story. Like, and through that chaos, a narrative evolves. And I mean, fundamentally, philosophically, I think basically the point is that in any of these fucking games, the narrative only exists because we put it there. We decide that, okay, this is the story, and now we've put the pieces together. And it's only as strong as our desire to weave that narrative.
Huh. I think that might be deeper than they intended, but I do think that's true.
You know what? That's like the tagline for me and everything. Samara, going deeper than anyone intended.
Because you're right, I don't have complicated feelings this column about games that are somewhat similar to these minigames, but are specifically sold as add-ons.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking about it. All this conversation is, well, not all this conversation is doing, but like the main thing I'm taking away from this conversation is like, I think I need to play this again. Mm. Like, I need to play this again coming into it with a different approach here. I feel like I don't have a coherent end to that thought. I'm sorry.
I mean, I am actually thinking about, I'm playing in a campaign right now that is very, very based around moving around the same set of towns and dealing with a bunch of town folk problems. I think some people are more bought into the town than others as players. And I wonder, even if not as adventurers, if this would be an interesting thing. I'm going to suggest maybe we do this to the DM as just a way of like, even if we're just all, we all just make up a new NPC And we'll have some tools going in. We've been adventurers in these towns, but just sort of like, this is a real tavern and with a few, and we've made up a few more NPCs, and it just makes the world a little more real. I think it might be an interesting bolt-on.
One thing that I've always kind of like, this is a thing I've said like about a lot of like created worlds and stuff like that. I've used it specifically in regard to Star Wars. I've always said, like, you know, I'm tired of the fucking Skywalkers. Let me know what's going on in, like, you know, little dingy bar in Coruscant. Or fuck even Coruscant, a planet that you've never heard of. Manon or something like that.
Good heavens, yes.
Let me know what, like, the other parts of this world are. And this game seems like it would be great at pulling out, like, more color out of the world. Like, how other people in this world live. Mm-hmm. And how they exist and so on and so forth. I mean, set this in a fucking Star Wars cantina. That could be really, really cool. Like an old Jedi hanging up his lightsaber or something like that.
Right. And that would really help smooth over some of the problems I think we'd have, because everyone's got more or less the same view of Star Wars in their head. Well, like fantasy genre is like, there's such a broad range of D&D experiences.
Yes.
To say D&D, which is one of the crazy things about it, but also it means a million different things to a million people. Wars is a more fixed point. Everyone can picture what a Star Wars adventure looks like.
Yeah, you say D&D, like you can have everything from like Eberron to like Dragonlance. Like,
don't forget Spelljammer.
Spelljammer, and
it's real again.
It's real again. It's back. No, I agree. Like, I think that it highlights the importance of shared vocabulary or framing devices or expectations, right? So I think that would heighten the experience and probably provide something slightly different. Though that being said, you know, I felt like we were all pretty skilled at very quickly being like, okay, it's not like this, it's more like this. Okay, like I felt like we were very responsive to each other, but perhaps some of the richness that could possibly be there. You know, some of these world building games, you built, you know, Cozy Town was a lovely little experience where we felt like, okay, I know what this town is. I know its history. I know all the things that moved in there. And by the time it's done, like, you know, I knew that I was like building that world over time. And I think maybe the mini games trick you into thinking that you're telling a tale on a more micro level. And I think you have to zoom out just slightly. To be like, you can dip into the bodies. Again, it's just like a Sims. What was the one city sim where you could go like all the way? I'm sure it was a regular Sim City, maybe, but that you could go from like city view, but like all the way down, you could go into a person and like, you know, inhabit their body or something like that. And I feel like this game, yeah, okay, flip in, be this person, play at that level, and then like allow yourself to pop out and then play some of the NPCs for the next game and flesh out that corner. Like maybe part of the problem was that we felt like these adventurers who have always been the center of their narratives forever needed to still be the center of the narrative. And maybe the real secret of the game is like, yeah, or not. Maybe the mayor comes in for a drink because we don't care actually about the cleric's troubles anymore because the cleric isn't the center of the world anymore because he's hung up his adventuring gear. And what is that look like to explore a world through all those other different lenses?
Right. You'd have to really refocus the game around the inn as the character, the town as the character. I think it's totally...
Yeah.
I think you need to change the way the rulebook presents things to encourage that, to support that, but I do think that's a very valid way to do it. It might be really, really interesting.
Totally. Well, because it's a false expectation that I've built a character sheet. If I've built a character sheet and I'm earning points that then are going to upgrade my inn, then my character needs to be the center of the story so that they can earn the points to upgrade the inn. So I think that mechanic is a little bit broken if you wanted to center the story around the inn more than the characters.
That's true. You could 100% have built an in-character sheet and, you know, five NPC sheets with, like, you know, a few lines of dialogue. Not dialogue, a few lines each. And then the inn would feel a lot more centered and feel a lot more free to dip people in and out. That's very true.
Yeah, because the inn felt like an afterthought. To your point, like, we had a couple times where we described things and... It was maybe sometimes a setting, but it didn't feel like this living, breathing thing where these stories were told and happened.
Yeah. Again, I'm just trying to figure out, like, what is the balance here in terms of, like, the inter-character moments were the things I think we really liked about this. And again, like the sense of place wasn't there, as opposed to something like A Cozy Town or A Quiet Year or something like that. Again, like, you know, we're talking about like, maybe that's the missing thing, is that like, there needs to be more on the front end to develop this world. Maybe you play this after you play The Quiet Year or something like that.
Yes.
Maybe not The Quiet Year specifically, but.
Yeah. I mean, I think we said earlier, like, it feels like a great, like, last lap for a campaign, you know, go back someplace you've been. But also, I want to replay it just to play all 12 because, like, if I, like, putting on a game designer hat, I'm sure that there is, because I think the final one, the final mini game is kind of similar to the first mini game that feels like pretty tied to the inn itself, if I remember correctly, and like a dinner you're hosting based on, you know, whatever. But I think that this game might actually do that thing where all this stuff that we're lacking and missing maybe comes because we didn't do the second half of games to like flesh out and continue to build that world. Like maybe a couple more rounds of time passing in building and a few more mini games. And then the final story game would actually at the end of it make us feel like, oh, okay, we did get there in the end. And it was a game that started with very little, but then like, you know, aggregated and built from and blossomed from there. And until I've played it through all the way, I feel like I can't say with certainty whether or not the game accomplishes that or not.
Very fair-minded of you.
I just, you know,
you're not wrong.
as somebody who is like sometimes like created some pretty like, okay, I've crafted this web as a DM and these like story moments that we have to do and that the later ones don't. I just did this for the bachelor party. I did this modular D&D game where, you know, a hero has to go out to the Thousand Islands and collect six halflings, and he could collect them in any order. And depending on the order that he collects them in, like parts of the story get revealed and are engaged in a certain way. But like as people got progressively drunker and like more tired on like hour 14 of this game, that you're like, oh, right, this the way in which I've crafted this whole thing was really dependent upon all the pieces being done and engaged with in a certain way. And if we had only done half of them, because I was like, let's cut some of these halflings. Let's just make them teleport on the boat. We can't do this. It's like, nope, you really do have to go through the experience of all of them so that it gets built in that way. And I wonder if this game is not similar to an extent.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, it's a one. I believe it's a one person project. I do not want to be monstrously hard in it. And it fulfilled the basic brief. Like, I had a great time. Like, we hit a lot of interesting highlights. Yeah. But yes, you could hand me anything and I would look at ways and be like, here's how this would be better for me. And
this is always.
And this is a review show. So, you know, it's what we're here to do.
If you listen to any one of these, I leave every review being like, and here's how I would change the rules. Just these are the Samara House rules for every game we play. Every game.
I mean, I will say like straight up, like, I mean, I think, yeah, we do. I think everyone does that with like every game. Like no one knows, like even like the rule, like, the keepers of the rules at D&D, at Wizards of the Coast. Like, sometimes they're like, I don't fucking know. Let's just do this. That'll work. But, like, I think also, like, straight up, like, yeah, like, for all I'm kind of, like, kind of going back and forth on it, like, this is the most I think a game has made me think about, like, what it is and what its structure is and what it's trying to intend of, like, pretty much anything else we've ever played. And I will take that every time over, like, a very well fleshed out, like, you know, very coherent thing. I like those too, but for different reasons. But like, this is actually making me think of like, okay, so like, it's making me think of like how I GM. It's making me think of like how I actually build scenes and how I actually like exist as a player in these scenes sometimes. And like, you know, whether that was, you know, I'm I don't know if that was the intent. I'm pretty sure it wasn't. But like, any game that can kind of teach you or impact you beyond just the borders of the game itself is something that I really, really appreciate.
Yeah. It's that frog math game, computer game you had me play. Clicker, whatever. What was that
frog
one?
Frog Fractions.
Frog Fractions. It's the Frog Fractions of TTRPGs to an extent of like, what is even going on here? How do we like figure it out? And as you figure out pieces of it in a scene, in a moment, you're like, okay, it's this. I'm holding on to this.
I take your metaphor, but I think they're different. I think Frog Fractions is kind of like weirdly absurd for the sake of absurdity, whereas I think this is intending to kind of shine a light on different parts of game structure and stuff like that. So Frog Fractions is great. You should play it. Don't expect a stew pot like experience for Frog Fractions.
No, sorry. Do not. Yes, no. Don't run on my metaphor on expectations for that game. But I agree with you. Like, I think I would rather, you know, there's something nice about going into a game knowing exactly what you're getting, you know, being like, well, there's another game of chess and here we go and it's done. But it is exciting to engage with something to be like, never seen anything like this before. This makes me think different. And even if it doesn't match my expectations, it really makes me think about a lot of things.
This game is bold in a way that, like, I really appreciate 100%. Even if it's not polished, but, like, what first steps in, like, different, like, in experimentation are, like, fully polished? They never are. So.
Right. Right, yeah. If, you know, if you made me the editor of this and put me in charge of putting it out, I would not make deep structural changes to it. I would make some presentational things and some suggestions and some additional tools that I think would be helpful in getting people the experience. And maybe clarify their intended experience and how they're getting you from step A to step B. But it's got good bones.
Yes. Absolutely.
Can't wait for Stewpot version 2.
Also makes me want to think about, like, all the other ones. Another place my brain went was, like, if I was going to create add-on options for this, like, what other scenes or things would you throw in there as alternatives? Because it really lends itself. Again, like, DM brain, mini game brain, you know, I do this kind of crap in all my D&D games where I'm like, how can I stretch the rules to, like, yeah, I mean, it's using some D&D mechanics in your stats, but it's really just like a weird mini game that's getting you to a different place. That excited me.
I will tell you, I did basically do the Bard's Tale mini game once. The PCs ended up eating the bard.
What kind of games are you running?
Apparently, I didn't think it was that kind of game. And then it turned out the party had gone really evil. There were a lot of steps in between, but, you know, they don't like the bard making fun of them. They really don't like that.
Fragile egos.
But it was a great scene.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, man. How did the bard taste?
How did you describe how the bard tasted to the PCs?
What ingredients did they use? Then, now you cut to the minigame where you're like, your unique ingredient is bard. Now, pull a card, and here's another unique ingredient that you have to cook with.
Is there an Iron Chef RPG yet? If not, there should be.
I want to make it.
I got to do some Googling. There is an Iron Chef video game that I very like, very much like. But all right, so we've been talking for a while here. Anything else that anybody wanted to touch on while we're talking about Stewpot?
No, I think I kind of hit my highlights.
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend it as an experience, given and you know just the context of everything you said. And I definitely would. I want to play again, but I want to play it all the way through.
Yes, I feel this is a game served not quite so well by the podcast format. I definitely want to play it again as well. I feel in a something off mic and, you know, something a little bit more casual, more kind of fun party-ish kind of feel to it.
Honestly, if I had this rule set and I didn't have a betrothed friend that was really way too hot for D&D, I would have that wanted to do like a whole day game thing, like I would have broken this out in a heartbeat to be like, yeah, man, let's drink all day, tell stories at the inn, and like pop in and out of this and see the world that like builds from that. Like that would be a lovely experience.
Yeah, actually, absolutely. One thing that could be interesting to your idea of doing it in that kind of all day setting with a larger group, you actually could break off into separate groups for games, and you'd need to do some sort of come back together and give them the update. But
well, that's when you introduce the bard mechanic, which is that the bard recounts the tales, and your time passage is not like, you know, every third round there's a bard round, and the bard is telling you in the future, you know, oh, like here are the tales of, you know, trips in. Already rewriting the rules.
Yeah, you have remixed it into a new game, but I like it.
I mean, you know. Like on the bard round, each team like sends their bard, and the one who tells the worst story gets eaten.
There you go.
I I'm good at designing games.
You're great at designing games. All right.
I feel like that has a very clear, that's a very clear intent, though. You say that, and like, I can picture this game in my head. I know what the designer was going for, I think.
What if, you know what? This is a different game, but it's like Bartle Royale, and it's just...
Okay, I think if we've hit Bartle Royale, we need to stop talking.
Fine.
Alrighty. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We hope you enjoyed this, and if you enjoyed hearing us talk about it and want to play Stewpot for yourself, you can find it on itch.io for $15. And if you'd like to help us out, you can rate and review us on our podcast on your podcast service of choice, or you can follow us on Twitter at OSTKpodcast. Jared, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been
great fun having you on. I expect retaliation in the next D&D game that we play. But thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the One Shot Test Kitchen, where we check... fuck, let me do that again.
That's not what we do, Mike.
Stop it.